What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Blurt It Out. So we got the new One Piece chapter dropped in at about 3:30 my time, 3:30 in the morning. So I read it in the morning, and then I read it again before doing the pod. So we're going to be talking about that. Been kind of busy, so I might not have too many additional topics besides the new chapter this time. But we'll see when we get to the end. I might do some updates on anime and games, but not go in depth as I usually do. But of course, we first have to get a word from our sponsors. You are now listening to the Blurt Out Podcast, which is available on your favorite podcast websites like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Check the link in the description or search Blurt It Out wherever you podcast, and you will find greatness. Episodes are also uploaded on my main YouTube channel at Tyrant King Kuma and on the official podcast YouTube channel at Blurt It Out Podcast. And as always, if you are not fully caught up to the latest episodes or chapters, please be careful because they are spoilers.
Oops. Spoilers.
Okay, so One Piece chapter 1113. We finally get the message. And we'll go into depth about it towards the end there once we go through the rest of the chapter. But the big reveal is that the world is going to sink into the ocean, which is not what I was expecting, honestly. I was fully expecting some void century reveal, and I mean, this is going to build into that, no doubt, but I was expecting it to be right out the gate void century stuff. But let's start at the beginning. First off, we have a color spread, and it is of Queen Robin playing chess with the rest of the Straw Hats, and this is like wonderfully done. So we have Luffy as the king, Nami as the queen, which I think just does more for that ship. We have Usopp and Brooke as bishops. We have Zoro and Sanji as knights. Jinbei and Franky as rooks. And then Chopper as the pawns. Just really well done. I love the look when Robin leans into her hand like that. Whenever she does that, top 10 look. It's so her element. That's when you know she's like the happiest, when she's just looking at you leaning like that. But the chapter opens up with us getting a view of what Mars saw earlier, what the gurgle was, and it's Vegapunk's brain. So I initially thought that his brain was divided amongst the satellites. I'm not sure why I thought that, and if I misread an explanation, but that's what I could have sworn that they were created through. But no, he just has his whole brain in a tube or in a jar. And it's basically housing, I think, all the knowledge. So this is what the antenna connects to and what the satellites connect to. This is what everything connects to, pretty much. And this is where all that knowledge is stored. So when he said he wants to connect his brain to the rest of the world, he's trying to connect this right here to the rest of the world. And even Mars is baffled by it. Like, he talks about how even in death, Vegapunk basically still exists because, I mean, his brain's still here. And it's still thriving. Like, it's unaffected by his main body, which is interesting. So even in the death of his main body, his brain still functions. And I wonder, so here's the thing, because he even talks about, is your consciousness still here? With Vegapunk being dead, is his devil fruit still active because he has the other satellites and his brain disconnected? Like, I wonder if this will give us a deeper insight onto how devil fruits work and what exactly they're connected to as far as, you know, like, where the lineage factor goes, where it adjusts the body. And it could probably explain how Blackbeard got Whitebeard's fruit. So I really do hope we get an explanation of how this all works. We get some panning shots of a bunch of different places still prepping for the message. As we expected, I mean, we're expecting to see everyone's reaction to this information in real time. So we're probably going to see that probably two or three more times during the explanation of this message. Now, the transponder snail that was set up in the same room with Vegapunk's brain, Mars destroys it. Turns out it was a decoy, which is to be expected. There was no way it was just sitting out, and there was no way that the message would be stopped that easily. So Mars is heated. He leaves the room, so now he's just hunting down the actual transponder snail. But he's definitely not going to find it in time. And because of that, all the Gorosei start panicking. Like, they start doing their telepathy, and they're like, okay, we can't stop it. Do we have any idea what he's going to say? And honestly, they don't. They have no idea what he knows, what he's going to reveal, and how deep he plans to go into it. All they know is that he's trying to basically pass on the torch of the Ohara Scholars. So that's how I know that even though the initial message of the world sinking into the ocean isn't exactly a void century reveal, it's going to be connected. Because if he's passing on the torch of Ohara, that means it's got to be connected, because that's what they were researching. And they even say, this isn't just Clover making speculation. Vegapunk's going to actually finish what they had started. So they're stressing, because they can't stop it, and they know that Vegapunk is about to turn the world on its side. And elsewhere, we get Sanji, who is reacting to Bonnie's cry for help. And this is something that a lot of people, like, this was like an agenda prediction that turned out true, which is funny. Being Sanji running into Gandhi before Zoro did. And there was no real guarantee that Zoro and Gandhi were going to fight. Literally saw a sword and was like, all right, Zoro's opponent. But Sanji ends up running up there first. And it's actually kind of cool, because I wanted to see Franky do something. Because Franky said, give back Bonnie. And he was squared up against Gandhi first. I would have loved to see Franky do something before Sanji stepped in. But, you know, it is what it is. Sanji has to steal the spotlight. And he actually flies in, gets a solid kick on Gandhi. I mean, it being a Gorosei, it doesn't do anything. He just gets captured right after. But still a cool feat. And we get this really cool panel. So when Sanji kicks Gandhi, Gandhi's head lights on fire. And basically the rest of his body lights on fire. And from that, the horse portion of Gandhi's like fruit animal ability comes out and snatches Sanji. So at this point, Gandhi has his horse form and his human form all in one, which is like this is way beyond how hybrids work. The only other person that's ever like had something similar to this, I think, was Black Maria. But this is on a different level of hybrid, which is just, it's landing Gandhi as my favorite Gorosei time and time again. From the point he hit this island, he's been putting in work, and he still is. Now, before Sanji really gets too injured, Oimo and Kashi restrain Gandhi, and they pretty much line him up for Bonnie to get some work in, because Bonnie uses Distorted Future, and she turns into a giant, and not just a giant, basically the mirror reflection of Luffy's Gear Fifth giant. Down to the pose that Luffy makes when he comes out of the clouds. So like the links between Bonnie's fruit and Luffy's fruit just keep connecting. And the fact that whenever Bonnie makes a wish or like a use of her fruit, it so closely reflects Luffy's without her having seen these abilities, which is insane. Because outside of like Onigashima, no one's seen giant Luffy. Yeah, Hirabani is doing the exact same thing, looking the exact same way. So there's got to be a deeper connection than just Bonnie wanting to be like Nika. There's got to be. But at this point, she seems even bigger than Oimo and Kashi. I mean, even Gandhi himself. And this could be a matter of perspective. Like, she's in the air right now, so she might just be looking bigger because she's coming down on them. But she looks huge. And while all this is going down, like, Vegapunk has started monologuing to the message. He's not actually saying the message, he's just monologuing to it. And he gets to a point where he confirms something we've been saying and something we pretty much figured out, which is that the broadcast is going to go out when his heart stops. So we're pretty much getting confirmation that at least the main stellar body of Vegapunk is in fact dead. Like I said, we pretty much knew that, but it's always good to see the confirmations in story. Plus, we're getting this information for everyone around the world. Because Vegapunk is like a household name. People know who Vegapunk is. So when the world gets the announcement that he's dead, basically the world's like, okay, we just lost the biggest brain in the world. And they know he's done so much for the world. And they're basically wondering who killed him. We even get a panel of Caesar and Judge reacting to it. And even they're shocked about it. Because, I mean, they're rivals. Now, because the news basically pitted the Straw Hats as the captors of Vegapunk, it kind of gives off the narrative that the Straw Hats are the reason he's dead. But Vegapunk even kind of programs in a failsafe for that, saying basically, don't blame whoever strikes me down as evil, regardless of who they seem to be. So basically, don't believe what you hear is pretty much what that is summed up. And I think he makes a valid point that, you know, he's not here to discuss right and wrong. So even though, you know, there are pirates here, there's the world government here, the Navy here, all that stuff, he's not about to say, you know, pirates are good, Marines are evil, Marines are good, pirates are evil. That's not what this is about. This is about knowledge. And the world getting access to knowledge they haven't had for hundreds of years. And a little bit later down the lines of this message, we get Saturn confronting the Straw Hats trying to get on Sunny, which is Nami, Robin, Chopper, Usopp, Brooke, and Lilith should be there too somewhere. But basically, Saturn and Robin recognize each other. Robin remembers the voice from O'Hara, and she's like, that's one of the five elders. And obviously, they know who Robin is. So off-rip, he tries to kill Robin. And this constantly reminds me of how much of a threat Robin is to the world government. And how low-key they keep it. Like, they gave her a huge bounty. But they really haven't divulged why they gave her a huge bounty. Like, people know that she's from O'Hara. And that basically the scholars were doing something that was purported to be evil, and that kind of follows her, but they don't really know what. Only the higher of the high knows what O'Hara was truly trying to do and what knowledge Robin carries. And we get this really awesome panel, one that might be my favorite of the chapter, honestly. And it's basically all the Straw Hats protecting Robin. So Saturn goes in to kill Robin, like straight shot, taking her out now. And Nami's like, all right, protect Robin. Everyone launches an attack or like a defense to protect Robin. Even you have Nami like diving, grasping Robin and pushing her out of the way. But you have like Brooke cutting a limb. You have Usopp launching explosions. Nami uses Zeus while grabbing Robin and dodging out of the way. And then Chopper using guard point. And like they all deflect one of Saturn's little pokey spears. And it's such a good panel. Plus, you got Robin Cheek. I mean, to top it all off. And Saturn in the background looking menacing. It's such a good panel all around. And then we cut back to Mars and York. Mars is struggling because he can't differentiate basically where the Dindin Mushi might be. Which is interesting because he was able to do it before and it didn't seem like there was a big issue. I don't think there's a bunch of new life forms on the island. If anything, there should be less since the Buster Call has been going on, like the island's on fire. But at this point, he can't see anything unique. He's like, there's too much information. I can't specify which one might be the Dindin Mushi. York is panicking because she feels like basically she failed. And they're not going to make her a celestial dragon because Vegapunk's message is going out. She's trying to use her connection as a Vegapunk to figure out where it's been hidden. But at this point, it's going to be too late. The girls, they make one last ditch kind of like idea to just destroy everything. But because they want the Mother Flame, basically they want that research. They want the equipment. They want everything that's there except Vegapunk. So like, we can't just blow everything up because we still need it. And we can't recreate it because we killed Vegapunk. So in other words, they play themselves hard. Because now they're stuck with nothing to do. And so then we get the reveal that the world is going to sink into the ocean. That is the big message so far. And accompanied with that is like a large pan of egghead, which is like 90% on fire. The only part that's not on fire is the Punk Records cloud above. Everything else is pretty much just burning. And then we get two unique shots. One of basically the Marines reacting, being confused. And the other is of like fishmen. So, or at least I should say mermaids, because there's no real fishmen in the panel, I don't think. But basically underwater. And that's so interesting, because why are we seeing mermaids specifically? Basically, why are they alluding to the fishmen race? And that ends the chapter with no break. I could have sworn we were going to get a break, but we've actually gone two more chapters with no break, which is fantastic. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the world sinking into the ocean, because one, this is going to be void century stuff. We know that. So we got to connect the world sinking to the other pieces of void century we've gotten so far. For example, Noah. We know that Joy Boy was looking for Noah for some reason. The Sea Kings were supposed to save Noah for Joy Boy's return. One of the major uses of Noah is to basically save life from an oncoming flood of the world. If Vegapunk's right and the world's going to go to the ocean, you would need a giant boat to save everyone. In place, Noah. So that would explain why we have Noah, why it was needed. Now, considering Luffy kind of messed some of it up, it still exists, but Luffy kind of destroyed parts of it. I mean, I imagine it can be rebuilt by any of the shipwrights. But we take that piece, and then we take the piece of ancient weapons. So we know that ancient weapons are a huge factor in the Void Century, and we saw what we purport to be an ancient weapon in Emu, destroying islands, basically creating giant holes in the ocean. We also know that Pluton, another ancient weapon, is buried under the sea, in the old Wano, essentially. And lastly, Poseidon exists in Fishman Island under the sea. So we have a lot of connections here of just everything being under the sea. So in a way, this makes a lot of sense. Like, this isn't as much as a surprise as you might think, just because there are pieces set up to this. Now, will it actually happen, and how soon it will happen? I think those are pieces that have to be further explained. I also think it might be possible to stop the world from sinking into the ocean. I think this is worst case scenario. As in, if the world government can't be stopped, if they're left to continue on whatever path they want to continue on, that's going to be the outcome. Because one thing we do know is that the One Piece is on Laugh Tale. Laugh Tale, as of now, shouldn't be under the ocean. It shouldn't be lost to the world quite yet. If the world were to flood, I'd imagine we'd lose the One Piece. So I feel like we gotta find that before this happens, or at least stop this from happening. And basically all the prep, everything that we have set up for the world sinking, I think is a failsafe. I think it's there to use in a last-ditch effort to save as many people as we can. Now, the part that is a bit more confusing for me is when it comes to the ancient kingdoms. Because we know that there was an ancient kingdom that got wiped out by the new kings and was basically erased from history. What does that have to do with the ocean? What does that have to do with sinking into the ocean, pretty much? You know, is that what happened to that kingdom? Is it possible that that kingdom is basically under the sea somewhere? We've been getting like tidbits of ancient kingdom stuff here in Egghead, but we still need more. And that's what I think Vegapunk will get to. Like, I think Vegapunk is going to have to, well, obviously he's gonna have to explain what he means here, but we gotta get more of the ancient kingdom, and we gotta get more of the ancient weapons. I don't think he's going to reveal everything about the Void Century and like all the ancients. Like, I don't think we're going to get the D reveal. I don't think that happens quite yet. Honestly, I think we get everything around it and just not that. I feel like he doesn't have that information, or at least what he has on that is only speculation. If we get the D-reveal, that would be amazing. But I have a feeling that it's not going to come quite yet. I think we still got some time before that happens. And I think as far as like the mermaid connection, I think that falls more to the Joy Boy, Sun God Nika type lore. Because we know that when we first brought up Sun God stuff, it was Who's Who and Jinbei talking about how the fishmen regarded a hero, Sun God Nika, in that same light. And if Luffy is basically Joy Boy, who's going to bring about a possible sinking of the world, it would make sense that he's connected to the fish folk. So there are definitely pieces to connect here. We are obviously working towards a much bigger puzzle than we kind of initially planned. Or at least I initially planned. But I'm excited to see where it goes from here. Like, I'm glad we aren't waiting that much longer for the message. Like, we obviously kind of drew it out here because Vegapunk was monologuing for the entire chapter until the last page. But the next chapter should just be lore content. Like, we shouldn't have to elaborate or monologue so much. We should just be getting into it. I think the most padding will come from the reactions of the people around the world, but that should only be a couple panels. But yeah, solid chapter. Like I said, I've been pressed with stuff, so I don't have as much to update you guys on as far as non-One Piece stuff. I've only been watching one anime right now, and that's Tomo Chino's a Girl, and I'm almost done with that. I have one more episode. That's been great. Just a nice, chill rom-com, you know, nothing crazy. But it's been fun. It's got a lot of good humor in it. It's got a lot of good characterization. I like the people in it. You know, it's solid all around. It's not cracking any top lists, but I do enjoy it. And it's one I've been kind of waiting to see. I've had it on the docket for a while now, and I was kind of just looking for an anime that wouldn't be too much, but I would still like be actively wanting to watch it. And so I picked that one. I will be done with it by the next pod. So I'll probably talk about a little bit more in depth than that. And if I start anything else, I'll probably add that to that as well. I've also been playing Persona 3 Reload, and I've been enjoying that. I've been blasting through the shadow levels like crazy. Like, I think I'm on level 60, somewhere around there. Like, basically, no, not 60. I think I'm a little bit before that. I'm on the second block, and I think where I just stopped is the full moon to unlock that to get to the next one. Also, Huko is queen. That is my current social link option. Huko all the way. I wanted to do Mitsurugi, but she needs like the maximum level of academics, and I'm an idiot, so that's not working out. But yeah, I will catch you guys up next time with more in-depth stuff of what's going on. I should have more time then. But as for now, like, comment, subscribe, and I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.